This podcast is brought to you by WRFL, Radio Free Lexington. Find us online at WRFL.fm. Catch us on your FM radio while you're in Central Kentucky at 88.1 FM, all the way to the left. Thank you for listening, and please be sure to subscribe.
Hello, Lexington. Welcome to Tech Talks. It is between the hours of 6 and 8 p.m., so strap in, buckle up, and get ready to get tech talked.
That's right. This week we got a lot of cool stuff coming up. My name is Grant.
And I am Mitch, and we are always here, your humble hosts, ready to host you here humbly.
That's right. So for the next 2 hours, we're going to be guiding you through everything in technology, as we always do from week to week here on Tech Talks.
That is correct. He is not lying to you. Neither am I, because that would be wrong. That would be taking advantage of you, our dear and gentle listener. So without further ado, we are going to kick off the show with some music, starting with the band Helios and their album Full Circle, and we're going to be playing actually the first two songs off that album, the intro and the song itself, Prey. And it's actually a really neat kind of spacey sounding thing that just sort of always gets me in the mood to talk about real, like, space technology kind of stuff, and you'll understand why in just a minute. So with that, we're going to set the mood for the rest of the show. Keep it locked all the way to the left at your only alternative left, WRFL Lexington. Welcome back. That is our space radar playing in the background. We are actively looking for other things.
That's what we do, actually.
This is not only a radio station, but also a radio observatory.
Yeah.
We observe radio here at Radio Free Lexington.
That's right. We actually run the radio tower the other way as well.
Yep.
So we're actually capturing all of those signals out there in the great big world.
And beyond.
We're looking for aliens.
We are, because they're out there. I mean, just listen to the radar. It's clearly pinging. That's every ping.
We're going to find you.
Right? All right, so back to all seriousness. We've got all kinds of stuff to talk about today. Grant, have we got anything spacey to start off with?
Do we have anything spacey to start off with?
Yes, that is exactly what I asked. Well, you are correct in my question.
Do you want to talk about the spaciest man alive?
Sure. Let's talk about the spaciest man alive.
Well, Elon Musk this week released, and it's titled this. I'm going to read you the title verbatim. Master Plan Part 2.
Part 2. Not to be mistaken with Master Plan Part 2 Electric Boogaloo. It is just Part 2. Electric Boogaloo hasn't come out yet. You can watch out for it at Barnes & Noble. It should be out in, what, like 20 years?
I guess another 10 years.
Yeah, it should be out in 10 years.
The first Master Plan was written 10 years ago, and
he's doing pretty good. He's doing pretty good on his Master Plan.
Yeah, it's actually funny that, like, he actually sets these insanely big concept goals and
achieves
most of them. He had 5 bullet points on the first Master Plan, and he hit 4 of them. So the ones that he got to, he made a solar power company,
mm-hmm,
that's been very successful. He made a low-volume luxury car company and then used the money to turn that into a medium-volume, more affordable car company, and then used that money to make it into a high-volume electric car company, which is what we're looking at. I mean, look at the pre-sales on the 3.
Right.
We're up to almost 500,000 pre-sales on a car.
That isn't even being manufactured yet.
That's just now starting to almost kind of be manufactured.
Okay. And in all honesty, my biggest question with this remains, if you go out and pre-order one of those right now, and they come out with a new model next year, do you get the model you pre-ordered, or do you get the model that is automatically upgraded? How are they going to handle that? Are they just going to keep producing these ones until they say, all right, no more pre-orders on this one?
I don't quite know, but I would assume that they would roll you back to whatever version is in production. So the plant that's actually just now getting going for the Model 3 is, he's calling it version 0, of the plant, and that the actual, true, full, complete version 1.0 of that factory won't be done until 2018, which most of the people on pre-order will still be getting their cars in 2018. So it's not unreasonable to believe there will be an entire generation jump in the middle of the pre-orders.
Mm-hmm.
So that's interesting. But there's a fifth part of the plan that you didn't get to quite yet, and that was about making space travel accessible. We're talking about, you know, low volume, expensive space travel, which still
is safe and relatively cheaper than what we've been doing it at.
Yeah, and is almost kind of achievable. I think he's getting close to that threshold, but it hasn't quite gotten there yet.
Mm. But nonetheless, you can't help but admire the man. I mean, it's almost like he has no... The word cannot does not exist in his vocabulary. He looks at a problem, and this is going to sound funny, he throws money at the problem until it's fixed, and...
It sounds nuts, but you're completely
right. But it's
working.
It's working. I hate to say it. He's throwing money at problems, and it's working.
Yeah.
As opposed to not throwing money at something, like how the government's not been throwing money at NASA, and therefore NASA's not working because it's not getting money thrown at it.
No, SpaceX is making leaps and bounds faster than NASA right now, and it's
because,
all about funding. Because he's throwing money and, in turn, engineers at the problem until it goes away.
Exactly. And, it's ingenious. I mean, I hate to say it, but it's what was going to happen.
Yeah.
I mean, you have to admit, anyone could see that the first person who actually starts throwing money at space, space research and such as in the same manner that SpaceX has, that they were going to start making leaps and bounds over any government-funded entity. And the fact that he has his hands, Elon Musk has his hands in so many different facets of industry. You know, like you said earlier, he's producing cars. He's got a solar company. He's working on the Hyperloop, which is a super fast transportation thing. The other thing, too, is he's really primarily focused on transportation-based technologies at the moment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because Tesla's a car company. He's using we're going to talk about it in a minute.
Yeah,
he's using
the
solar company and combining it with
Solar
Tesla.
Solar
City, yeah. And he's combining it with Tesla in order to make a new... Are they Tesla still, or are they...
I think it's all going to fall into Tesla.
Okay, and they're using Solar City's technology and more or less solar bricks in order to power an all-electric car that's solar-powered that's going
to
be released
to make
under
a solar
Tesla.
Solar-electric car.
And, then obviously the Hyperloop being almost near instantaneous travel.
Yeah.
You know?
I mean, we're talking about someone whose goal here is... And this as well was in the master plan, that his goal with this was he wanted to take the resources from the Model 3 and use it to churn out two more kinds of vehicles. He wanted to work on Tesla Semi, which is going to be obviously a trucking venture, and then as well as that, a Tesla bus, which is going to be he calls it a high-volume urban transportation solution, which it is an interesting option. The idea of an automated bus that would have a lot of capacity and a lot of ability there in really, really modernizing the way that buses happen. And I think there's a lot of opportunity there for buses, because right now the average person in their car thinks of a bus as an obstacle
mm-hmm.
in their route.
Yeah.
Because it's slow, it accelerates slowly, it slows down slowly. But we're talking about having an app on your phone or a push button at the stop that only if you push the button does the bus mm-hmm. even bother to stop.
And what's funny is I was thinking about that earlier today, actually, while I was waiting on the bus. But we actually just had a caller call in and wanted to know a little bit more about when Elon Musk bought out Solar City originally. Whether or not that's turned out to be a sound investment for him, and sort of looking at the economic implications of when he bought out Solar City.
So Solar City has seen its ups and downs, but it has grown substantially over the past several years. It actually didn't go public until 2013.
Now, was that after the purchase by Elon? Or
I believe was after the purchase. The company was founded in 2006,
mm-hmm.
and SolarCity didn't go public until 2013, I believe.
Which is almost 7 years later. I mean, that's a, you know, that's actually a substantial amount of time to form a company and wait that long to go public.
I mean, that, it gives you a lot of strength, though. You're already solidified as a
mm-hmm.
company.
Mm-hmm. You've clearly shown that you can run 7 years without having to deal with, you know, selling off shares of the company in order to fund it. Therefore, you know, it does drive the price of the stock up because it's clearly a sound investment, the fact that it ran so long okay. Mm-hmm. You know, and especially, you know, with a buyout of the magnitude with Elon Musk behind it, you know, his name in business nowadays just sort of is synonymous with progress, in all honesty. I mean, he's always, if Google was a person, it would be Elon Musk.
I have no question about that. He is a modern innovator who's in a very special situation. If he capitalizes well on his opportunities mm-hmm. over the next 10, 20 years.
You know what's funny? He could probably be the Henry Ford of space.
Yeah. That's the exact analogy I was going to make. If mm-hmm. he really hits his stride here and plays his cards right, when it comes to Tesla...
And I have every reason to think he will.
And when it comes to SpaceX over the next 10 years, we're talking about that level of name identification that will mm-hmm. resonate for centuries, probably.
Mm-hmm.
It's incredible.
That is, you know, it's going to be interesting to see where it goes, especially with his part two, part due,
mm-hmm.
his master plan part due.
Certainly. Yeah. No, I see where you're going, and
I'm still baffled, in all honesty, by how much success he's had, because he got his initial success by inventing PayPal, correct?
Yeah. That's where
so,
originally...
So he's the inventor of PayPal, and so he, instead of just sitting on all that money and spending it on himself, he was like, you know, what other cool things can I do with this money? And then went out and did cool things with that money and made even more. And he's like, wow, that worked out great. I should use all this extra money and go do more cool stuff and make more money in cool ways. And he's continually doing that. I mean, it's just it's very rare in our day and age to see such an innovator as Elon Musk, you know? Because, like, for example, if you look at Mark Zuckerberg was an innovator in by creating Facebook. He invented a whole new, I guess, realm of society.
Yeah. You know? I mean, social media had existed and there was this internet culture, but it hadn't really
solidified. Yeah, that I would say with the like chat rooms and stuff of old and early 2000s, you know, before the advent of MySpace and Facebook and Twitter, that I don't think I would call that social media. That's not social media in the way that we know it today. Social media as we know it today was created almost single-handedly by the efforts of Facebook, MySpace, and Twitter.
Yeah,
and seeing how that played out for him, he created Facebook and then really hasn't done a whole lot other than strictly Facebook stuff.
Yeah, everything that he's done has pivoted around Facebook in some capacity.
Mm-hmm.
We've never seen him altogether deviate out into other stuff, mm-hmm. which is what makes it different than, say, Larry Page at Google.
Right, yeah.
Who has certainly orchestrated a number of projects, and it's interesting to see that play out. But I wanted to get down to the end of this, and you can actually read this off of Tesla's website. The entire master plan is there. To wrap it up, he puts out four big things he's going for. He wants to make solar roofs. We're talking about conceptually not putting solar panels on a roof, but actually...
The building materials themselves, like, if, for example, solar shingles.
Yes. Yeah, exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So that's number one. Number two is cover the entire market for electric vehicles mm-hmm. so that theoretically...
He wants a monopoly on it.
He wants to move to an all-electric environment. And if you had asked me about this 5 years ago, I would have said, no, we're not ready for that. But Tesla's staying power right now is proving to me.
In all honesty, to sort of elaborate on that,
Tesla really didn't even start the electric car craze. I think more the first company that proved that it could be done. And I mean, first of all, obviously there was the Toyota Prius with its infancy of, oh, as you brake, it recharges the battery and can go 50 miles on a single tank of gas. But then Nissan, I think Nissan's Leaf car, the one that had the blue logo on the front, was the first full electric car that we saw for consumer use, I would say.
Yeah.
And then after that, that's when Tesla started like, oh, let's go. And then Chevy even tried to get into it a little bit and with the Volt, yes. And I'll admit, the Chevy Volt has not been very successful. The Nissan Leaf has had a lot of success for it being the first on the market.
Fully, yeah.
Yeah, the first one on the market. But Tesla has just taken the market by storm because it is luxury in addition to electric, whereas Nissan's was not necessarily electric and a luxury electric car. It was the economy electric car. And that's what Chevy, I think, tried to hit that midpoint between a Tesla and an economy Nissan Leaf, and it kind of flopped. It wasn't really, you know, people didn't want to get it because it was too expensive, unlike the Nissan Leaf, and people didn't want to get it because it wasn't as nice as the Tesla.
Yeah, I think they put themselves in a weird middle ground that they didn't really need to be in.
Mm-hmm.
But it's interesting to see every generation of Teslas, the price drops, the market grows. Mm-hmm. I mean, we're talking about feasibly in the next decade a transition in Tesla moving into commercial transportation, talking buses, talking semis.
Now, if they manage that, if they manage that idea like what you were talking about, I mean, it's going to be real interesting to see how it goes, you know, as far as if they can actually get a corner on the market of public transportation, full-on electric public transportation. I mean, the last time we saw full-on public electric transportation was the trolley car days. And they sort of went out of phase back then, because honestly, I think it was more because of the overhead lines that they had to run in order to run trolleys and trams and whatnot. And, you know, it's definitely going to be interesting to see if, like you said, you can have like an Uber bus. We've talked about that before, a fully automated bus where you and a group of eight people can order up a bus from, say, Lextran, for example, and that bus comes to a pickup location near you or even to your house if they expand it that much. And you get on the bus, and it's like a limo, you know? It takes you where you're going to go, drops you off, and then goes off and picks someone else up in the vicinity. And if Tesla can get a corner on, even if they have driver, you know, actual full, you know, manned buses to where there's someone actually driving it, much like Lextran, you know, it would definitely be interesting to see. I would really like to see Tesla attempt to do that in the way that Google Fiber has been attempting to bring high-speed internet to certain cities. I'd like to see them pick a city like Lexington that has Lextran or some form of public transportation and come here and try it out and see how it goes, you know?
Yeah, yeah. I would be all for that as well. I think there's a lot of potential there. And hitting on the last two points of this master plan update, the third one out of the four is being in line with Google, developing a full self-driving capacity that is 10 times safer than human manual, and using machine learning with that. So, I mean, this year we had a group, a fleet of semis travel over 1,000 miles across Europe and do it successfully, no issue. I mean, this is what we're moving towards. And so the fact that he has that on his checklist is catch up and beat Google at their own game as far as automated safety is exciting. That's the kind of arms race I want to see them get into. I want to see them claim, oh, our tests are 10 times as safe. They're 20 times as safe. I think 10 times is undershooting where they could be.
Oh, yeah.
I think, because Google's already pretty much at 10 times in their tests right now. I think 5 years from now, 10 years from now, we're going to see cars that have safety records that are 50 times better than a human.
Well, and also, I would be really interested to see if Elon Musk is going to try to get into the solar roadway concept as well, because I saw last week, and we can talk about this after the break, that I think it was Route 66. Some portions of Route 66 have actually been fitted as solar roadways with the plastic panels and everything that we've discussed before. And they're going to try it out.
Stops.
Yeah, yeah, and they're going to try it out and see. You know, personally, I'm in favor of an electric roadway because, you know, if you have something like that, it wouldn't be difficult at all to attach some little LED strips on the inside of it as well, to where if it's raining or if it's dark,
LEDs.
Exactly. If
and
it's already
heat strips.
Exactly. Heat strips. So less ice in the winter. Secondly, if it's raining or bad eyesight, the LED strips can light up, mm-hmm. and the roadways will be illuminated for you to follow.
Yeah.
And also, in the case of an emergency situation, say they have to evacuate, they can, you know, program that roadway to be turned into an evacuation route.
Yeah.
And literally be directing people onto the proper roadways and controlling the flow of traffic in such a way to where an evacuation can happen safely and effectively, mm-hmm. and quickly. So, you know, it's going to be interesting to see if he just, you know, if he's like, well, let's try it. Let's see what happens, you know?
Yeah.
So, with that, that's enough about our personal idol. And we're going to go on and tell you a little bit of what's going on around town over this dark and spooky music. So, tonight at 7 p.m., so in just a few minutes, we've got Napoleon Maddox and Tatsuya Nakanatani at Broomwagon at 7 p.m. Then we've got The Caribbean and Attempt playing at Al's Bar at 9 p.m. The Vagabonds and Jericho Woods at Cosmic Charlie's at 10, and that's what's happening tonight. Tomorrow, Friday, July 22nd, we've got Streetnar, Goldlight, and Grace Joyner. That'll be at Al's Beer Garden at 10 p.m. Then we've got movie night Iron Man at the Lancaster Grand Theater at 2 p.m. So that should be fun. Then All Saints Fade, Dead on Fire, Atomic Thrill Ride, Our Fall, Los Vicious, Radio Lair, and Damage Therapy, and Kentucky Ugly are all going to be playing at Al's Bar tomorrow evening at 6 p.m. That is a lot.
That is.
Then we've got Fountain Films on Friday playing Elf at Triangle Park at 9:30 p.m. tomorrow night. Then Saturday, we've got the Uptown Hoedown 6, Blind Corn Liquor Pickers, Moonshine District, Driftwood Gypsy, Brian Minx, the Kentucky Sons, Bear Traffic Control, and Lee Bryant will all be playing at Al's Bar at 6 p.m. And then there are Rough Customers, Sleepover, and Semper Vivi will be at Cosmic Charlie's tomorrow evening at 10 p.m. So, with that, everybody, we will be... Oh, there's one other thing. Thursday Night Live. Oh, nope, never mind. That already happened. So, with that, we're going to hop off here, get back to the music. So keep it locked all the way to the left at the only alternative left, WRFL Lexington. You're tuned into Tech Talks.
Hey there. If you're enjoying this podcast from WRFL Lexington, you may enjoy our live radio stream at WRFL.fm and, of course, via radio at 88.1 FM in the Central Kentucky area. We have a wide variety of programs you're sure to enjoy. Just go to WRFL.fm/schedule and see what programs appeal most to you. Thanks again for listening to this podcast from WRFL Lexington.
Welcome back to Tech Talks, everyone.
That's right. My name is Grant.
And I am Mitch, and we've got some really, really downy music tonight, because we were talking about some real stuff. And, you know, we were talking about space. And transportation and electricity, and now, what are we going to talk about?
We're going to talk about the internet.
The internet.
That's right.
This is how I would feel at the bottom of the internet. This music right here that I'm going to turn up right now.
Not too much. It's hard to take in. Actually, I kind of like it. It's very textural.
It is, and I feel like that's a pretty good description of how the bottom of the internet is. It's very textural. There's a lot to it. It's a weird place. as we've said many times over about the internet.
That's fair.
So, what specifically about the internet, good sir?
This past month, at the end of June, it was June 28th, Mark Zuckerberg woke up and got on a plane at 2 a.m. It traveled out to a test facility in Arizona where a Facebook team had been working in secret to do what? Make a solar airplane high altitude that drops Wi-Fi. So it's a high altitude, low speed airplane that brings along a strong internet access signal with it so that it can be flown over an area and provide connectivity for a huge amount of region underneath it. They were testing it out in Arizona because, well, obviously it's pretty sunny and it's pretty flat, so it was pretty good test space for this. They're calling it the ISD, the Internet Service Drone, which is an interesting concept, really, that you would have this large... It's got the style of, like, almost kind of a very flat stealth plane in the form of a drone, and it's, I think it's a pretty fascinating concept there, that we're looking at flying basically a mobile cell phone tower. It can be up in the air for almost an hour at a time. This just seems like a really, really clever idea to me. Because what's the number one problem whenever you go anywhere where there's lots and lots of people? What's the number one problem you encounter every time you go to a big concert or you go to a stadium for a game or anything like that? It always crushes the cell tower in the area. Always.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I used to have the problem living on South Campus that it was part of the same cell region as the tower that would provide all of the access for people that were at the Coliseum. So on game day, my cell phone just straight up did not work on South Campus. And, you know, that's a problem that we've all encountered from time to time. But this seems like a good solution to that. I mean, we're talking about something that could fly at a high altitude that would provide a temporary crutch for getting through those kind of situations. So there's certainly a lot of potential to this, and it seems pretty interesting to me. Have I mentioned the specs on this thing? This thing has a wingspan of 141 feet.
Wow.
That's 30 feet more than a Boeing 737. Like, this is a massive aircraft. And it weighs 900 pounds.
Really?
Less than a smart car. It's basically an electric-powered glider with a propeller on it.
That's kind of cool.
Yeah. Yeah, it's made out of ultralight carbon fiber. I'm just really impressed with the sheer size of this thing. It's colossal.
Mas grande.
It is more large.
Mas grande. Much big.
Much big.
So is it meant... you said it was low altitude, correct?
No, it's high altitude.
High altitude. So are we talking...
about double a plane height, 70,000 feet,
and it can provide cell service to how far range underneath it?
A couple miles square
from its center point that it's flying
over. Yeah, so you have the center point, and then it kind of spreads out in a region that's maybe I don't remember what the actual number was in here, but it's many square miles immediately around it, and they can actually tether to one another. So you can have
We could basically have a squadron of these things flying across the air, providing, you know, cell service at regulated intervals.
And only one of them actually has to be touching a cell tower or one of their special radars
in order to ping the rest of them. And the other interesting thing too about it is it geometrically. So if you look at the angles and everything, being that far up, you wouldn't actually have to have as many in order to cover more ground.
Oh, yeah.
Being that far up, you could have them maybe at intervals of, gosh, every time zone. And just they keep flying around the Earth in order to provide, and then they keep flowing over each time zone, constantly providing service.
I mean, we're talking about features on these planes. These planes can be many, many miles apart. Tens, maybe hundreds of miles by the time the technology catches up to this, miles apart, and still be able to communicate with one another, especially in these high altitudes. There's very low interference. It's smart. It's very smart. I'll give Facebook that. They've really, really outdone themselves on this one. And so I'm curious to see if they are gonna keep going with this. I'd like to see them keep moving forward with this initiative. I think they have the resources, clearly. I think if they team up with another group that's already doing gliders, and if they take up the Solar Impulse team and keep doing research in that, I think there's a lot of potential here. I think there's a lot of cool stuff that could happen.
I agree. Yeah, I'm just pondering the implications of that. Interesting. What up do we have next? Yes, words.
Another quick related Facebook story. The goal that they're going for that would tie into those internet drones is that they want to be able to get a wireless signal, and they're very close to it, at 10 gigabits per second.
That would be good. That's actually better than most landline speeds at this point.
Oh, yeah.
Google Fiber is advertising, what, 100 gigabits per second?
I don't remember what they're quoting on that, actually. But Facebook is shooting for tens of gigabits per second, and they're doing it optically.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yep. You actually surprisingly can create a lot, or you know, transfer a lot of data by, like, a laser burst. If you ever see any, like, sci-fi movies, they're typically referred to as, like, data bursts. And basically what it is you encode the data into a series of optical flashes with the laser that indicate zeros and ones.
Kind of like Morse code.
Yeah, you boil everything down to its binary codes, and then you flash it at the other, you know, on a tight beam, or it can be a widespread beam, but the range on a widespread beam, instead of being able to, you know, you'd have to be relatively closer in order to pick it up, it would disperse too much over time.
Yeah.
Versus a tight beam focused at another specific, you know, typically fixed position, mm-hmm. you can almost guarantee always that they're going to get everything you send them. And it's actually the same premise in which fiber optic cables work. Fiber optic cables, all they are actually just little, if you remember as kids, we had those things. It was basically like a little tree, and it was just a bunch of white cables that, you know, spraying out into like a dome shape or something, and it would have multicolor lights that would play across it. That's actually fiber
optic. The
little
hand toys.
No, I'm talking about ones like you would get to set on your tabletop.
Oh, yeah, gotcha.
Yeah. So that's fiber optic cables right there. And the cables themselves would light up green, but if you looked at, you know, like at a thread, if you will, dead on, it would be a lot brighter. And so basically what they did is they took those, bundled them up, and plugged one end in one end they plugged one end of the cord into a receiver / transmitter. So one side of the receiver transmitter would be a photo-optic sensor, and the other one would just be a little LED light sitting side by side, so that as the light was coming in, the photo-optic sensor was able to more or less record the flashes that it was picking, you know, being presented with from all the cables. Then to transmit, the LED sitting right beside it would instead blink, sending the light through the fiber-optic cables to end up at the other destination to be received by its photo sensor. Or photosensitive sensor. Yeah. And that's the premise in which this would work, is it would be optically, they would have a fixed satellite station or you know, on the ground, a fixed dish station, if you will. And they would be shooting up a more or less constantly to a drone that would maintain a circular flight pattern directly above that observatory. And they would just constantly be beaming optically into that drone, and it would be tethered to all the other drones in the network that were passing by, and thus allow, you know, that speed to be up as well. So it's a really interesting concept. I'd be really curious to see if we could pull it off, or if there's even a better way to do it than drones, because I'm hesitant to rely on drones like that in that kind of automated capacity, because without constant direct controller oversight, automatic guidance systems like that for something that small and fragile will, you know, if it flies through a thunderstorm, that drone's just going to get destroyed, you know, or service is going to get interrupted or something like that. And there's no really good predictive algorithms to help say, oh, hey, that there's a storm over there. I should fly around it. It's you know, there's not a whole lot readily available of that kind of technology yet. So, personally, I think there would be a better way to manage this somehow. And actually, on this similar topic, I found out here in Lexington, if you remember here last August, I want to say, they were, about a year ago, they were going through and putting up these new, more or less, they looked like electric poles all up and down the main roads, and they'd have these big white boxes attached to them and a little more or less brown cone at the top. Those towers with the brown cones at the top and the large white boxes on the side that look like a transformer, a power transformer, I found out the other day those are actually mini cell towers. That they've, instead of having one large tower, they've decided to plant a bunch of mini cell towers throughout the city in order to help alleviate some of the cell traffic. Which is also good for emergency services. For example, if there's a catastrophe or something, your cell phone can be pinged by all those towers, and it makes a much more precise triangulation method for finding your device if you're in danger or something. And on the topic of triangulation and cell towers, in case anyone's ever been curious how that works, what it is your cell phone will routinely send out a signal, a little radio burst, to find the nearest cell phone tower. And typically it'll find two or three. You'd have to be in a very dispersed area in order to find only, you know, one or even two towers. And if you only ping one tower, then it's almost impossible to really know where you're at other than, hey, he's in that direction.
Well, direction even is kind of ambiguous. What it is it's
it would
distance.
Give you a compass pointing.
You get a heading.
You get a heading towards, from that tower, you know, line up north with the magnetic north pole, and it could tell you the angle at which you would need to go, I would imagine.
Well, what happens is you send a burst to a radio tower, and it captures that burst and immediately replies and sends back to you.
It's like a computer ping, and if you ever pinged a computer.
So what happens is you get the travel time to and from that tower, basically. And so then you know, all right, that took maybe a tenth of a second. So I know that I am however far away. You know, I'm 5 miles from this tower. So you take the tower, and now you have a 5-mile radius around this tower.
Mm-hmm.
So you're talking about you are somewhere on the edge of this curve, 5 miles from this tower. So then you get a second tower off somewhere else. And that tower says, okay, you're 7 miles away. So then you draw a 7-mile arc around that tower, and now you're at one of those two intersecting points. Mm. You know you're either... Because that's what's going
to happen. I would imagine that you would be able to pick out the direction even at one tower, because it would know from which side more or less the tower is being hit with the signal.
They might be able to do that if they spent... But there's so much time being put into trying to make these towers non-directional, so they're good
mm-hmm.
capturing whatever comes in from any direction.
Okay, well, given that information, then yes, I can see what you're saying.
Yeah. There are specialized kinds of towers that can tell direction, mm-hmm. and they're very, very good for satellite phones and things mm-hmm. like that. But once only once you get that third tower do you have enough information to be certain of your exact location.
Yeah, because then you've got one leg from the first tower saying, okay, he's 5 miles from here. And then you've got the second leg saying, okay, it's 7 miles from here. And then that basically, even if you want to just draw a line between Tower 1 and Tower 2, what you would do then is Tower 3, you would take its radius and you would more or less pull that that line in the middle. Like, imagine you've got two strings between a tower and or two towers, and you pull it to the point where it touches that circle for 7 miles or whatever.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
At that point, that exact point is where you're located. And that is how cell phone triangulation or any kind of triangulation works.
And that's where the term comes from.
It makes a triangle between the three, I guess, sensor points,
being the
towers in this case.
And this is common not just in cell phones, but in a lot of media that relies on
location. A lot of GPS. That's all global positioning services is triangulation.
Mm-hmm. You'll notice sometimes with sensors in automated spaces and factories and things like that, they'll put sensors in the corners of rooms so that no matter what space you're in, you should have four sensors facing towards you so that even if one of them is damaged or otherwise not functioning correctly,
you've got three others available for a triangulation.
Exactly.
And in all honesty, the more sensors you add on, or the more towers in this case you add on,
the more certainty,
the more precision you get, you know. So... It's kind of interesting that we use basic geometry to do something so complex.
That
in all
basic
honesty.
Geometry put us in space. That basic geometry put us on the moon.
So did bad puns. Bad puns put us on the moon. Yep. What else do we have, or do we want to go out with music?
We can, but I thought that you would find this interesting.
Let's find me interested.
Tinder. is releasing a new feature called Tinder Social, which is basically Tinder for friends. The exact thing that everybody's been joking about for years now. Friender. Tinder Social.
I have one response to that.
That's fair.
That is fair. So basically, you have a Tinder profile, your friends have a Tinder profile. You go through your friends regularly and either swipe left or right on your friends. Is that what's happening?
Well, no, you're finding more friends by getting a profile and saying, would I want to be friends with this person? Rather than
saying, do
I want to date this person?
I understand. I understand what you're saying now. Okay, gotcha. So you're saying on Tinder, you may not necessarily want to date that person, but you may look at it and be like, hey, I bet that'd be a cool friend. So you swipe and sort them into a friend directory as opposed to a dating directory.
There you go.
All right, that is a lot more better than what I was imagining. I was like, oh, so we're returning to the age of super social awkwardness. Cool. Thanks, Tinder. You did it. Hooray. I don't know. I find Tinder to be a funny thing in and of itself, mainly just...
Tinder has had such a weird inspiration on culture.
It has. It really has. I mean, it's
like the fact that
it's coined several
now.
Pop culture terms.
Yeah.
You know, like swipe right.
Yeah, swipe right.
Swipe left. You know, that pretty much those two are their big terms, but there's all sorts of other things. And then also, I'll admit, I find it funny how some people will use Tinder to troll other people. Those are my favorite people in the universe, are the ones that use Tinder for joking purposes. For example, you and I both had a friend that we know who had a Tinder profile, and it was him wearing a penguin suit.
Oh, that was spectacular.
That was easily the best Tinder profile I've ever seen. And you would not believe the amount of people that were actually interested in him in that penguin suit.
It's fair. It's attention getting.
Well, yeah. I mean, you've got to be really courageous to sit there and wear a penguin suit and say, hey, do you want to go on a date? I'm in a penguin suit. You want to go?
That's fair.
You know, it's another example of social media influencing culture directly is Tinder, right along there with Twitter and Facebook and everything, pretty much except Google Plus. I hate to say it, Google Plus has probably been Google's only unsuccessful project,
except for its predecessor Buzz and Wave and all of the other times.
Okay, let me rephrase that.
Trying to be social.
Google social media is a flop.
Yes.
Yes, I will go on record and say that. I'm currently on record saying it. So.
We got you.
Yep, you got
me. Recorded.
It's recorded for all time.
Taking you to court.
Now you just have to travel out in space far enough to hear me say these words.
Again.
Yeah, that's the other funny thing, too. If there's ever a radio show you've missed here at WRFL, just get Elon Musk to put you in a spaceship and fly way out past Earth.
Several times the speed of light. And
yeah,
eventually you'll catch up to this radio signal. That's
and then
right.
You can listen to us again, and it'll be great.
Yeah.
And you'll have beaten the speed of light, so go on that.
Yeah.
You won. You won the universe.
You did it.
Hooray. The cake is not a lie for you. The cake does exist at the end of that tunnel. So with that and with the ending of our video game funniness, it is currently time for the Party Panda Power Hour on WRFL Lexington with DJ Spencer Sell. He's in the house.
Oh,
he does not
look,
have...
Here he is, the man, the legend.
The man who does not have the cow swimming in peanut butter.
Not yet. We're getting there, man.
He's getting there. So with
what a legend.
With that, we are going to play some music, some hopefully R&B funky music, and then we're going to let him do his thing. So thank you for tuning in and teching out with us here on Tech Talks this evening.
We'll see you next week.
We will. Actually, we won't see you, but you'll listen to us.
Fair enough.
Hopefully.